Well, good morning. This is Per Fargren, KBOO News of Public Affairs, and we have a focus on the Middle East special program from 9 to 11, and we have three hosts and three guests, maybe a fourth mystery guest. Anyway, our hosts are Hala Gharis and Will Seaman, and our first guest, we'll go right to that guest, is Ali Abu Nima. Ali, what?
Good morning. We have with us today Ali Abu Nima, author of One Country, A Bold Proposal to End the Palestinian-Israeli Impasse. And the title of that is actually The Israeli-Palestinian Impasse, published by Metropolitan Books. His articles have appeared in the Chicago Tribune, the Daily Star, the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, the Financial Times, the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Jordan Times, among numerous other publications. Ali is a frequent guest on local, national, and international radio and television programs, including CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, Pacifica Radio, Radio Canada, and the BBC. Mr. Abu Nima co-founded the Electronic Intifada, an internet gateway about Palestine and the Palestine-Israeli conflict. You can go to it at electronicintifada.net. He also co-founded Electronic Iraq and Electronic Lebanon. Good morning, Mr. Abu Nima.
Good morning to you.
Let me start by asking you about the U.S. media's most recent coverage of Israel's attack on Lebanon and Gaza.
Well, it was appalling to the point of tears. I was fortunate to be out of the country during the first 2 weeks of the war. I was in Ireland, where the atmosphere was totally, totally different in terms of public sentiment, in terms of media coverage, in terms of the whole understanding. And since I came back to the U.S., I actually sort of shelter myself from much of the media coverage because it's so atrocious. It feels like being assaulted. Basically, I'd say the media coverage boils down to the repetition without question of fundamental Israeli claims without examining the mountain of evidence that shows them to be false. So basic Israeli claims like Israel was attacked unprovoked, for example, ignoring the many reports from the United Nations peacekeepers in South Lebanon of the constant Israeli assaults across the border into Lebanon that have been ongoing since Israel withdrew from most of southern Lebanon in 2000. Israel claiming that it doesn't attack civilians when the death toll was clear from the beginning. The vast majority of people killed by Israel were civilians. Human rights groups like Human Rights Watch said Israel was deliberately targeting civilians. I mean, the evidence was there before our eyes, and yet this is treated as if it's some kind of outrageous claim or just ignored by most of the media. The claims that Hezbollah targets civilians, when in fact of the 157 Israelis killed in this war, all but 41 were Israeli soldiers, and most of them were killed inside Lebanon, invading soldiers killed inside Lebanon. So you wouldn't get most of this from the media, which is obsessed with protecting Israel, as if Israel is the one that risked being annihilated rather than Lebanon, which was systematically destroyed.
Ali, tell us a little bit more about what the media has basically adopted in terms of Israel's terminology, such as these two soldiers being kidnapped.
Well, that you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, the way most people in the region see it is that Israel is in a state of war with most of its neighbors, certainly with the Palestinians, with Lebanon, with Syria. And Israel freely violates the sovereignty and security of its neighbors, as I mentioned, in Lebanon, certainly. But every day it invades Palestinian towns and refugee camps and literally kidnaps people. Just today, the news has reported that Israel has extended the detention without charge or trial of the elected speaker of the Palestinian Legislative Council, Abdelaziz Adouek, who is a distinguished gentleman of an advanced age who is sick and required hospital treatment because of the mistreatment he has suffered at the hands of the Israeli occupiers. He, along with half of the Palestinian Legislative Council, these are the democratically elected representatives of Palestinians living under Israeli military rule, have been kidnapped and taken hostage by Israel. And all of this without a word of protest from the so-called international community. Now, on the other hand, Hamas carried out a military operation against Israeli forces enforcing the siege and occupation of Gaza, captured, I think under international law it would be that they captured an Israeli prisoner of war. In revenge for this, Israel began systematic bombardment of the civilian population of Gaza. Since the beginning of July, almost 200 Palestinians have been killed in Gaza, more than half of them civilians and a third of them children. And the same story again was repeated with respect to Lebanon. Hezbollah carried out a military operation in a war zone on the border against Israeli military forces, captured two Israeli soldiers, and Israel's response was to launch an all-out attack against Lebanon civilians. Who are the cowardly terrorists here? Who are the ones who attack civilians, and who are the ones who attack military targets? The reality is a total reverse of the propaganda claim that the so-called Palestinian and Lebanese terrorists attack civilians while Israel is the noble army that fights fair and square.
Mm-hmm.
We saw Israel only attacking civilians in this war.
It seems like not only is the international community deaf, dumb, and blind to what is happening in Gaza, but the media is also. Can you tell us how much of what's happening in Gaza is being reported by the U.S. media?
Well, it's very little. It's in the background. It's very, very little. It's always been the case. I mean, you know, the zoo animals in Israeli zoos get more sympathetic coverage than Palestinians. And I'm not joking. It sounds like I am, but if you look, you find in the U.S. newspapers all these reports about how the animals in Haifa Zoo were stressed out by Hezbollah rocket attacks. You routinely find stories about how Israelis are getting therapists for their pets because they're stressed out by the sound of explosions, while the plight of Palestinian children being butchered by the Israeli occupation army with American weapons is ignored. It's as if it's not happening. And the situation is quite different in other parts of the world. Certainly on Al Jazeera, which I'm able to watch here by satellite and which has very, very comprehensive coverage, a great deal of attention is given to the plight of civilians in Palestine, in Iraq, in Lebanon. They would consider that the foremost story here, and I think it shows that there is a placing of human life as much higher, having much higher value in some of the foreign media than in the U.S. media.
Mm-hmm. Ali, it seems insane that the Israeli government and Israeli policies would allow for the arrest of one-third of the democratically elected leadership of the Palestinian people. Some would say that in Palestine they had cleaner elections than we did here in the U.S. with the Bush election. Can you talk to us about two things? One is the Hamas election, and the other one is, what does Israel hope to accomplish by arresting democratically elected leaders?
Let me start with the second question first of what Israel hopes to accomplish. Israel is, and this requires us to go to the very definition of what Israel is, because I don't think it's possible to understand all of the events that are occurring without understanding what Israel is and what Israel's problem is. Palestine, prior to the establishment of Israel, was a multi-religious, multicultural society with Muslims, Christians, Jews, and others living alongside each other centuries of harmony, centuries of coexistence. Palestine was always a place of refuge for people in need. You had people coming from Africa, from Armenia, from Chechnya, from the Caucasus. Many people came to Palestine, lived among the indigenous population there without any problems. The problem began when the Zionist movement came with the goal of turning this multi-religious, multi-ethnic, multicultural country into an exclusively Jewish state, and not even a state for all Jews, but a state of European Jews, which discriminated very heavily against non-European Jews. And obviously the vast majority of people in Palestine at the time wanted nothing to do with such a state, did not want to live in a state for Jews and by Jews, and of course couldn't because they were explicitly excluded. And so the existence of Israel, because it doesn't have the consent of the majority of the population of Palestine, most of whom were expelled when Israel was created. It couldn't have been created without the expulsion of the Palestinians. It exists only by force. It's a state that has no legitimacy in the eyes of the victims, of the people who are forced out of the way in order to allow it to be established. So it exists only by force. And so Israel can only exist as long as the Palestinians and Lebanese and other people are terrified of it. And this is why Israel was created through massacres and continues to exist only with the regular application of massacres. What has happened in recent years, and what has really turned things around with the recent war, is that the people of the region are no longer terrified of Israel. Yes, they are still terrorized by Israel, because Israel has enormous capacity to kill and harm and demolish homes, and we've seen all of that in Lebanon as we have in Gaza. But what we're seeing now is the emergence of a generation that refuses to be terrified into submission by Israel. And so what Israel is trying to do in Lebanon, trying to do in Gaza, is to use massive violence against the civilian population to send a message that you must accept Israel. You cannot fight against Israel. You cannot regain your rights. You must accept only what we're willing to give you. So Israel is not prepared to see the emergence of a Palestinian state, not prepared to allow Palestinians to live with equal rights in a single state. And so Israel only has no other policies except brute force. Kill people who protest, call anyone who dares to resist or raise a hand against the suppression of terrorists. If Palestinians have elections, arrest them. There's nothing new. In 1976, in the West Bank, Israel organized municipal elections, which it intended to create an alternative leadership to the Palestine Liberation Organization. At that time, that's who Israel considered to be the major threat. So they organized these local elections. Now, the Palestinians defied the Israelis because they elected candidates who were all loyal to the PLO. So what did Israel do? It began assassinating the mayors, maiming them. The mayor of Nablus was severely injured by an Israeli bomb and lost his legs, exiling them, expelling them from their own country. So the policy that we saw after the election in January is simply a repeat of the Israeli policies. The only Palestinian leaders Israel is prepared to accept are Quisling leaders who will act as proxies on behalf of the occupation. Just like in Lebanon, Israel wants the Lebanese government and the Lebanese army to act as a defense force for Israel. I mean, it's clear that the Lebanese army has no ability to defend Lebanon. The Lebanese army is there to defend Israel against the Lebanese resistance. The same in the occupied territories. Israel will tolerate a Palestinian authority which acts as a proxy police force for Israel. They will not tolerate a Palestinian authority which is there to defend Palestinians against Israel. So this is the big picture, but there is really no plan here. the Israelis have no plan. Their latest plan, which is a form of grand apartheid, what they call separation or convergence or realignment, basically means occupying half the West Bank and building the separation wall and expanding the settlements while pulling out of the most heavily populated Palestinian population centers in the West Bank has now collapsed too. So Israel is heading to full-scale apartheid in which you have one Jewish government ruling over the whole country when Jews are the minority population. This is where it's heading. It's already here. It is an apartheid state. It needs to be named as such. It needs to be opposed as such. And we need to recognize there will be no peace, not for Israelis, not for Palestinians, not for anyone else, until this atrocious system is dismantled and Israelis and Palestinians are liberated from it.
Ali, this is Will Seaman speaking here. I was wondering if you could speak to the situation as it's evolving as well in the West Bank. You've talked a little bit about Gaza, but I know there have been events in the West Bank that have occurred in the shadow of the war in Lebanon. And also, perhaps, if you could address the emerging political realities within the occupied territories. And I'm thinking of the efforts on the part of the PLO and Hamas to develop a kind of a unity government, and also the role of organizations such as the Palestinian National Initiative, players like Dr. Mustafa Barghouti and others, who are representing, you know, even greater variation within the politics of the occupied territories.
Well, I think there's a growing feeling among Palestinians that the Palestinian Authority should be disbanded. And I'm hearing more and more talk of this. It's something that I've thought should happen for many years, because the Palestinian Authority was created to be an interim body on the way to independence. The moment it became clear that Israel has no intention of allowing the Palestinians to have an independent state, then the Palestinian Authority only serves Israel by creating the fiction that there is a Palestinian government, absolving Israel of its responsibilities as the occupying power, while at the same time, in reality, the Palestinian Authority has no power. As we've seen, half of its cabinet ministers have been kidnapped by the Israeli occupation. Half of the members of the legislature have been kidnapped. Israel has systematically bombed, talk of bombing civilian targets. They've bombed the Palestinian Interior Ministry. They've bombed the Foreign Ministry. They've bombed many other ministries and civilian departments of the Palestinian Authority. And there is no Palestinian government. There is no Palestinian government. And we should stop talking about a Palestinian government. It's as if I declare a government on the moon and declare myself president of the moon. In my own mind, I may be president of the moon, but I have no authority on the ground. So I think this realization is dawning on a lot more Palestinians. There are those within the Palestinian Authority who are from the Oslo crowd, the group that signed the Oslo Accord, who are desperate to hold on to their positions, and who unfortunately have been willing to sow into Palestinian conflict rather than give up positions in a meaningless authority. And so I think Hamas is responding to that by trying to take a conciliatory approach, but I think ultimately what we've seen is very clear that Israel and the United States will not allow Hamas to have effective control of the government, and therefore I think we can say if there can be no democracy, if Palestinians cannot choose their own government, if they have to be forced after clearly voting for one party into a sort of a so-called national unity coalition with Washington's candidate just so to avoid being bombed and assassinated by Israel, then you really can't call that democratic or normal politics.
Ali, the Palestinian people in the Middle East have been known as the most secular Arabs in the Middle East. Can you talk to us about how it is that the most secular Arabs in the Middle East would elect Hamas?
Yes, I mean, to me it's very simple to understand, and the same is true with regard to Hezbollah, where we're being told, these are Shiites, these are Shiites, these are Shiites. And, you know, what does that matter to people? I mean, I don't ask whether my congressman is Protestant or Catholic or Baptist, or, you know, I don't know and I don't care. The reason that people are supporting Hezbollah and Hamas is because of their politics, not because of their religion. When you listen to the leaders of Hamas or Hezbollah talking on Al Jazeera or in the newspapers, they've written the articles in the LA Times and the Guardian, and others have published articles by various Hamas leaders. They don't talk about religion. They talk about politics. They talk about the issues that are in people's lives: occupation, lack of freedom, lack of control over their own lives, corruption in government, the lack of social and economic justice. These are the issues that these parties address. And it's because of that that they have gained a widespread following, not because of the religious content, primarily of their politics. And, so, you know, even it's interesting, the Hezbollah don't refer to themselves as, you know, like it's put in the American newspapers. Hezbollah don't talk about jihad. They don't talk about themselves as mujahideen. They call themselves resistance. They say we are muqawama. They don't say mujahideen. They say muqawameen. We are resisting, and we're resisting a foreign occupation. So their politics are earthly. Their politics are rooted in the fact that they're under foreign occupation. And their solutions are also earthly. Where the state, in Lebanon, for example, and certainly in Palestine, the occupation and the Palestinian Authority failed to provide health care, failed to provide social welfare, failed to provide the basic needs, these groups stepped in and did it. So they're serving real social needs and doing so in a way that is responsive to their constituency. They are social movements. And I think that that is something the media here refuse to recognize, and they prefer to demonize and point to them as somehow foreign, a foreign alien presence implanted in the local population.
Hi, this is Pear. Is there any indication what Israel plans to do next? Looks like the Olmert government is on its way out. Polls indicate that at least half the Israeli population thinks the war was a failure. So do we have Netanyahu to look forward to? I mean, what do they think they can do?
It doesn't matter. You can change Olmert with Netanyahu, with Ehud Barak, with Sharon. It's not going to make a difference. Israel is at a dead end. You have an Israeli state that rules over 10 million people in the West Bank, Gaza Strip, East Jerusalem, and Israel within the 1967 borders. Fewer than half those people are Jewish. More than half of those people are not Jewish. You have an apartheid situation. You have a minority government representing an enfranchised minority, which controls the political, military, and economic power in the country. And you have a disenfranchised majority. And as long as that's the case, there's going to be conflict. And the demographic trends are such that that the Jews are becoming a minority very, very rapidly. And the projections are that in about 10 years, there'll be somewhere around 40% of the population. And so this situation can't go on. And the only answer Israelis have up their sleeves now is, where force didn't work, use more force. And where more force didn't work, use even more force. This is a recipe for catastrophe. It's a recipe for endless civil war. It certainly, Israel will never achieve security this way, especially after its defeat in Lebanon, where it has simply, I think, proven that where negotiation doesn't work with Israel, where making generous concessions to Israel doesn't work, resistance does. That's the message Israel has sent to the people of the region, and I think it has no answer except more war and more bombardment and more killing. Well, and I think unless we are prepared to speak up, to impose costs on Israel in the forms of international sanctions and divestment, pressing our local institutions in this country to refuse to deal with this apartheid state the way that was done with South Africa. I don't think we have anything to look forward to except more war. We need to wonder why in this country, in this supposedly great democracy, all of our members of Congress and elected officials are falling over themselves to pledge allegiance to the State of Israel. When even the opinion polls in this country showed, where this is certainly the most pro-Israeli public opinion in the world, I'd say it's even more pro-Israeli than Israel in some ways. In this country, more than half of the population blamed Israel or both sides for starting this war. Fewer than half the population believed that Hezbollah was responsible for starting this war. And yet 100% of our politicians behave as if Israel can do no wrong. So in this country, we have to ask why, even in the limited democracy we have here, in the democracy of billionaires and millionaires, you have no debate whatsoever on the support for Israel. We have to start to speak up, and we have to impose a cost on politicians, because this is more than about just the fate of Israelis and Palestinians. Our country, these United States, are being dragged into the mud by these policies. The reason this country is hated around the world is because of these policies, and for no other reason. This country that pretended a year ago, the so-called Cedar Revolution, pretended to be a big friend of Lebanon, went around saying, look, we love the Lebanese, we want democracy in Lebanon, and not just stood by as Israel was destroying Lebanon and butchering its people, but airlifted the bombs, rushed the bombs to Israel so it could kill more Lebanese people, refused to call for a ceasefire. I mean, you look at the pictures coming out of Lebanon, people putting banners over the big piles of rubble of the apartment buildings leveled in South Beirut, big signs above the rubble saying made in the USA. Everybody in the region knows it. Those images are being seen all over the Arab world. People don't see them because they know it. And we need, for our own interest, to pull this country out of Israel's wars.
Ali, everybody seems to know it except the vast majority of the American public, because they're not getting it.
I think they know it. I do think they know it. I think it's there, but I think that, you know, what's remarkable to me is how much people know and how much they question, despite the fact that there is this relentless bombardment of propaganda 24 hours a day, telling them that Arabs are evil, mm-hmm. Muslims are evil, that all these groups are terrorist groups, that they have no genuine causes, that the people there have no rights. Mm-hmm. Despite this blanket propaganda, people are questioning it, and I think that's something we have to latch onto and be willing to encourage and engage with, and not throw up our hands in despair. Despite the enormity of the mountain we face in turning public opinion.
Absolutely.
Around.
Hey, Ali, can you give us 30 seconds to tell us about your book, One Country?
Absolutely. It's One Country, and it's out in October, although I'll shamelessly say it's already available on Amazon. And it's a discussion. It's really an attempt to break open this discussion about the future of Palestine-Israel and to say there is no future in ethnic exclusivity, that the future has to come in embracing everyone as human beings and dismantling the current system of racism and apartheid. And I do believe, I hope that it does open a real debate. I do fundamentally believe that in the end, Israelis and Palestinians can, must, and will live together, but only after a struggle for equal rights, economic, social, and political for everyone.
Well,
and that's what the book takes on.
Well, thank you very much for being with us. We're going to go on to our next guest. We talked with Ali Abu Nima of Electronic Intifada. Thank you very much for your time.